So I hate the word discharge. Yeah. It's so sad that we came up with this many years ago, because it basically means goodbye. You know, I don't have to worry about you anymore. You are discharged and out of my control and worry. Right. That can't be the case any longer.
Gavin and I often consider ourselves very lucky to get to interview truly inspiring healthcare leadership for Pop Health Podcast. We're excited to bring you another one of those conversations today, our interview with Providence Health and Services Southern California CEO Eric Wexler. Eric took control of the Southern California region shortly before their merger with St. Joseph Health, which created one of the largest health systems in the area with 50 hospitals covering 7 states. In this interview, we'll cover the challenges of running a hospital organization during a time of uncertainty, the use of technology, and how outreach in the community can truly solve some of the issues facing us in population health. As always, thank you so much for listening. You can find us on Twitter. We'd love to connect with you there. I'm at PopHealthZach, Z-A-C, and Gavin is at GavinPopHealth. Thanks so much and enjoy this episode.
So, Eric, we like to open episodes by learning a little bit about our guests, kind of outside of the day-to-day role as a leader for a large health system. So can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, maybe something that would be surprising for folks?
Surprising. Well, yeah, I know one thing that I always seem to surprise people with. I love to camp out.
Nice.
My wife and I actually have an RV.
Okay.
And in fact, we're about to go up to Idlewild this weekend. Oh, nice. So we're really excited about that. But, you know, most people, I think when they look at me, they don't see, a guy that likes to be out in the middle of the woods. But you are wrong. I love being in the woods.
So when you go out in an RV, you don't stay in the RV the whole time. What do you do when you go out?
So if I had my choice, I'd be on a sleeping bag with not even a tent. But my wife appreciates not having bugs crawling around her. It's only there for that reason. Otherwise, I am out of it all the time. We're hiking, we have bikes, we take our dogs with us, and it's just to be in the outdoors and escape some of the challenges that we all have. I think it's an important part of work balance to try to find things like that to do.
Yeah, no, well said. We had a previous guest on the show, Dr. Eric Coleman, who does a lot of traveling and is kind of a guru and a leader like yourself within healthcare. And he was very similar. He loved the outdoors. And I'm curious, we should be asking the outdoors question. A lot of folks might be a trend among healthcare leaders here.
Well, especially in California. You know, when I lived back in the Northeast, you really couldn't, you could have an RV, but you'd only use it maybe 4 months out of the year. Here, you can use it all the time.
Right.
Absolutely.
And without getting too sidetracked, just for people who might enjoy camping, what's been your favorite camping trip that you've taken?
Yeah, I love them all. I have to say, I've been up to Idlewild one other time, and I think in Southern California, that is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
But we're about to do a trip to Oregon, and that's going to be, in about another month and a half from now. That, I think, when I come back, will probably be my new answer.
Absolutely.
Nice. Well, look forward to hearing more about that. So you mentioned the Northeast. You previously worked for Tenet,
right,
in the Northeast. And what made you look at the Providence opportunity and have you make the trek down here to Southern California?
I really enjoyed my time at Tenet. It's a great organization. The people there are just wonderful, outstanding, very talented healthcare executives. I was in the investor-owned space for about 5 or 6 years. And I woke up one day after spending, before I got to Tenet, about a little less than 20 years in the not-for-profit space. I just woke up one day and decided that I really didn't want to have to worry about the 90-day sprint and, the stock price and all the issues that come with investor-owned organizations that have to be responsive to financial analysts in the street. Now, that's not that in the not-for-profit space, we don't have financial analysts that are looking at what we do. The rating agencies do that.
Right.
But I just feel like in the not-for-profit space, we can have a little more of a long-term view.
Yeah.
So I woke up one day and thought, if I ever had the opportunity to get back into the not-for-profit world, I would explore it. And ironically, a couple of weeks later, I got a call from a recruiter that was interested in filling the role for Providence for what I do today, and went through the process and was just totally blown away by Providence. It's an incredible organization. Its mission is rock solid.
Right.
And we are really deeply committed to it. So it's pretty cool to be here.
Nice. Well, I know we talked a few weeks ago. I was born at a Providence ministry.
Yeah, you turned out well.
Oh, well, thanks. I appreciate it. So you went from Tenet, which, you know, there's stockholders and things like that, and a lot of financial responsibilities. You still have financial responsibility here. But one thing that's different here at Providence, and we're on site here at St. John's Health Center in Santa Monica. And I'm sorry, did I say the name right? I used to always call it St. John's. What's the official name?
It's St. John's, but, you know, it sounded pretty good.
Okay.
Here we go.
So this is one of many ministries here in Southern California. What's one of the main differences, or some of the differences, between working in a faith-based organization versus one that wasn't faith-based?
Well, first, I love the fact that you just called our hospitals ministries, because we do that at Providence. And the reason we do that is, you know, we feel that our work is a calling. We try not to think about it as work, but we are here to truly serve the poor and vulnerable. And a ministry has a spiritual wrap. And I think that's one of the special things about Providence, is while we are providing fantastic quality care and a patient experience that hopefully exceeds others, we also ensure that we respect the spiritual need of patients, no matter what their religion is. It's not focused on one religion. We are very, very accepting of all religions here, and our mission leaders do a great job in being committed to that. Now, when I was back at Tenet, by the way, before I became the regional CEO, I was the CEO of St. Vincent Hospital in Worcester, and that hospital also had a spiritual mission. So it's not that investor-owned organizations sometimes don't do that. It's rare. Even at St. Vincent, that spiritual wrap was very important, and it was one of very few within Tenet that are like that. Throughout all of Providence, you know, we have this focus. And I feel really blessed to have the chance to interact with our mission leaders and with our caregivers. Everybody in our organization is called a caregiver, whether you're in the financial aspect of what we do, or a nurse. Everybody's considered a caregiver because the work that we do is delivering good care to our communities.
That makes perfect sense.
And just a quick follow-up on that. Would you say that with the differences with where you are now versus Tenet, do you think that there are more operational differences for what your job is with faith-based versus non-faith-based, or is it more different being nonprofit and for-profit?
Great question. You know, the reality is there is not as much difference as one might think. I think in the investor-owned space, there is a certain financial discipline that it has an intensity to it that's required for us to meet the needs of our stockholders and our financial analysts. The intensity that we see in the not-for-profit space is very, very similar, but I think we're able to apply a balance that has that long-term Sure. view that I mentioned earlier. For me, I think that's a better fit with healthcare.
Yeah.
I really worry, and I'm not speaking about Tenet, I'm speaking about the entire investor-owned sector. I really worry that difficult decisions, we have to be courageous all the time with difficult decisions, but sometimes those difficult decisions could be made so that we satisfy those who are investing and not having the balance that's necessary to making those decisions for those we're caring for.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So Providence's ministries are supporting patients and health. Providence also has kind of a unique component, and that's our division, if you will, and that's a high school.
Yeah.
I'm not aware, and I don't think Zach is either, right, Zach?
Mm-mm.
Of any other hospital systems that operate, and I guess own, and might be the proper term too, own and operate a high school. Tell us about that relationship.
It is such a special part of my responsibilities within the California, the Southern California region in Burbank. We have Providence High School, and it's been part of Providence for a long, 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 long time. And it is a high school that isn't focused, you know, in healthcare. It's a high school, and it's a Catholic high school. One of the great things about this particular high school is because it's in Burbank and right next to the Disney Studios. They have a special program there to teach people about movie production and entertainment. So we find that we have a good number of students that are just interested in that come to that high school. We like that high school for a very special reason beyond what, you know, the norm that anybody would like a school for. It's our chance to see young people and what their needs are and begin to look at those needs and think about how that could be applied to what we deliver in healthcare. And it also gives those students a chance to come into our ministries, our hospitals, and see what we're doing in a more regular way than maybe other high schools would, and learn about healthcare and hopefully get interested in becoming a nurse or a doctor or an environmental service aide or whatever the role might be.
That's pretty, and I believe you can walk from St. Joseph.
You can. St. Joseph Medical Center in Burbank is literally right next door. So if I have a meeting over at St. Joseph, I'm out in our hospitals all the time. So I try not to make our leaders ever come to visit with me in my little corporate office someplace. I try to go to them because I don't want to waste their time. Yeah. And so I'll walk over to the high school. It's great because the leader, his name's Joe, of the high school, not only will we spend some time meeting with each other, but we'll get to walk around and I'll get to see what's going on in classrooms and in the studios. And it's just so inspiring.
High school's a little bit different today, though.
It is. You know, when I was in high school, we didn't even have computers, I hate to admit. So, you know, it's a little... When you walk into a classroom and everyone has a laptop open, you know, I'm wondering, are they just surfing the net?
Right.
And you think that's bad, but actually they are just surfing the net, learning about you know, what's out there through the electronic means as they're learning in the classroom.
And excellent segue there, because as Providence continues to expand its reach and grow, embracing technology has been a large focus of that. Can you tell us a little bit about the efforts to embrace technology or technology that you're excited about?
Yeah, this is going to be one of the most prolific, I think, expansions in healthcare that maybe we have seen perhaps in decades, because we are now so dependent on what's in our pocket. You know, a smartphone has the capacity to do more than ever before. So one very interesting development that maybe some of your audience has seen and you've seen, but a lot of people still haven't, is there are ways of monitoring your health through your smartphone, your cardiac rhythms, your respirations. There are ways now, and we have this in Providence, St. Joseph, to access a clinician live and do a consult through your phone or your laptop or your computer to get advice on, you know, what might be bothering you from a health perspective. You know, many years ago, but it's now getting into, you know, further better development, people began to be able to access their medical records.
Right.
So I go to the doctor now, and we use a software called Epic, and it's got an app that allows all my lab results and my physician notes, everything that the doctor may be doing for me, to be loaded into that app. So I can see my own information without having to go beg for it or get a copy of it.
Right. My mom actually just recently had bronchitis. Shout out to my mom. She's doing better now.
Oh, that's cool.
But she, rather than going to the doctor, was able to do a video consult through her computer with a nurse practitioner. And the nurse practitioner listened to her cough and was able to prescribe her the medication that she needed right there. So it really is an incredible opportunity that we have there. With that being said, we've had different people on talking about technology, or heard different people talking about technology. And there have been a few interesting thoughts on where we're going with healthcare ideas and technology. One was that we haven't really found the way that technology is going to significantly improve access and lower costs. I think with telemedicine, people thought right at the beginning that that was going to be the thing that changed everything. But I think we've seen that it actually hasn't caught on quite as fast or as widespread as we thought. And another thought, we had somebody on the podcast who mentioned that as technology has developed, one thing that people really need to ask themselves is, are we developing this because patients need it or because we can, and we can make these nice, shiny, new pieces of technology? I'm just curious about your thoughts on kind of where we're going with technology in that way.
Yeah, I think we're going to need it. And I don't think it's just because we can do it. We are going to be pressed as the population ages. All the baby boomers are starting to move into that Medicare space. And unfortunately, that means, you know, we're going to be at an age where we're going to begin to start having either diseases or illnesses that have to be treated more than when we were young people. Right. And so teleservices, as you mentioned before, I want to go back to that because I want to reference telepsych, for example. I think we are on the cusp of seeing this take off more than ever before. The reason I mentioned telepsych, we're using that in Providence St. Joseph. In fact, several of our hospitals here in Southern California have put it in place. It is very difficult to find psychiatrists that will serve in hospitals now. It's a very demanding job.
Sure.
And unfortunately, the rates of reimbursement for physicians of that specialty are very low. Okay. So many of them are going into outpatient practices. Now, we have put together a program, a telepsych program, and in one of our hospitals, Tarzana, we are using this system. 70% of our consults in the emergency department are done by telepsych now.
Wow.
You're looking at a person, you know, through a screen. You're having a very private and good conversation, and the psychiatrist is able to do proper treatment and triaging for that patient, where it would be extremely difficult for us to get psychiatrists to respond to the hospital. So that's, you know, one example.
So how is that response time when you have the patient in the emergency department? Are these folks on call? Does it take some time to get them on the screen? How does that work?
It's very, very quick because we have a cadre of them that are at the ready.
Okay.
In either their home or in a room where they can literally get on screen almost instantly.
Wow.
With the patient, unless they are in the process of doing other consults, and there's so many, you know, consults that they, it may be a little bit slower. We haven't experienced that yet, fortunately.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, if we had to wait for a psychiatrist to respond to the hospital, it could be hours and hours and hours.
Right. Yeah.
Providence is also looking outside of the walls of the many hospitals that it has. We actually had the honor of having you on a previous episode. Everybody can check it out. It was at the VNAA conference just recently. And you talked a little bit about your own home health division and also credentialing other home healths. Providence also has a hospice division. What other ways is Providence looking at population health and trying to manage the population that you serve?
Yeah, you know, and I think we as an if I can use the word industry very loosely, need to do a lot more in this area because all the work that's done outside of the walls of our hospitals out in the community to make sure people can easily access care prevents disease from happening, which if it's not prevented results in hospital stays that are very expensive. And it's one of the reasons that the cost of care is so high in the United States. And I can, you know, get on my soapbox about that because I think we as a population are not doing ourselves justice in that, but I won't go off on that right now. We can come back to that if you want.
Sure.
But I, you know, what I would say is the work we're doing in home care to make sure that people are treated at home and they don't need to be back in the hospital or in a rehab facility is extremely important. We have a institute called the Institute for Human Caring, and they focus on providing extraordinary hospice services because, you know, unfortunately, some of us are not going to be in a curable situation.
Right.
But the institute focuses on how to provide a quality of life given that unfortunate situation. So that you can be at home and you can be at family and not in an inpatient room in a facility someplace, no matter where it is.
Right. We're actually very familiar with your hospice division as well as your health system. But also, I know that you were also one of the first groups to really take on palliative care and really look at the end of life. And we've had guests on who have talked about just the exorbitant costs of the end of life in the United States in general. So it really has been a holistic look from Providence in that respect. To touch on a little bit of a personal note, at the same conference that we met you at, You actually shared a personal anecdote about your mother when you were talking about those post-acute services or services outside of the hospital walls. Do you mind sharing the story for the audience?
No, I'd be happy to. You know, many people still don't understand what home care is about. And, you know, I think in particular, as our parents, you know, grandparents, aunts, uncles, us, as we age, you know, it is hard once you leave a hospital and go home. You know, there can be a lot of confusion that occurs, and even temporary dementia right. occurs within a hospital. My mom, who is in her 80s, she's still, you know, of sound mind and body, thank goodness. But, you know, she had a really bad fall at home. And so she went to the hospital. This is in New York City. And, you know, she had an operation. It was, you know, kind of difficult. And she went home. She called me because we got home care for her. She needed somebody to be with her. She called me very upset about the service she was getting and, you know, the problem with being in my type of job. People actually think I'm a doctor or something. My family thinks I'm a doctor too. You know? So I was getting nervous that she was going to ask me some sort of a clinical question, but it wasn't that. She said that the person, the home care aide, was unwilling to help clean the house.
Right.
And so I thought maybe the dementia, the temporary dementia at the hospital had carried over to being at home. But I quickly realized is even the word home care, people can confuse what that means.
Yeah, absolutely.
These are nurses, you know, or nurses' aides that are coming to your house to make sure you don't fall, that you take your medicine, that you are cleaned and, you know, bathed and so on and so forth. And, you know, so I had to explain to my mother the scope of services that you should expect from somebody in this type of a role.
Right.
It was kind of funny, but a little, you know, a little worrisome
yes.
for somebody in healthcare like me.
As people who work in the home care space, we have experienced all sorts of those, washing the car, the outside window, polishing the silver, all of that. So it does get lost in translation sometimes a little bit. But without going too far off of that, you actually used that anecdote when you were talking about the idea of reimagining discharge. And when people think about discharge, they obviously think about, you know, from a hospital to another setting. But you said not only reimagining it there and what it means to discharge a patient, but also what it means to discharge a patient from home care. Can you shed a little bit of light on your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So I hate the word discharge. Yeah. It's so sad that we came up with this many years ago because it basically means goodbye. You know, I don't have to worry about you anymore. You are discharged and out of my control and worry. Right. That can't be the case any longer. When people leave the acute care setting, we need to transition them to the proper next level of care. And hopefully most of the time, it's not a next level of care. You're fine and you can do whatever you need to do. But there are still a lot of cases. People either need home care or they have to go to a subacute care facility.
Right.
I think in the acute care space, the hospital space, we've gotten a little bit better at this and making sure we transition you well.
Yeah.
I challenged at that conference, and I continue to my colleagues within Providence, to think about what happens in transitioning from home care to self-reliance.
Yeah.
And part of what needs to occur, because now all of a sudden, there's not somebody by your side. At one point, you know, that person I spoke with, my mom was taking care of her, was gone.
Right.
So was my mother properly trained to now bathe herself, to be able to ambulate from her bedroom to the kitchen? Now, we made sure, because we know enough about this in my family, or me and my sister, to help to make that happen. But that's not happening well in home care. And so what happens is people then fall.
Yeah.
And we have a readmission. Yep. And the whole process starts over again. And that is a very poor quality of care and a poor quality of life for those that we serve.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, you're ahead of the game, I guess you can say, with a lot of health systems, with not just having the acute walls, but being a part of that transition outside of those four walls.
Thanks.
Providence has done quite a bit throughout the Northwest and here in Southern California, and Providence made the news about a year or two ago as well with the merger, I guess is the proper term, of St. Joseph Health System.
Right.
And what will the new name be?
Well, the name of the organization is Providence St. Joseph Health. So it was formally named that when we completed the affiliation with one another. We use that name at the very top level of the system.
Okay.
And so we still use Providence Health and Services in many of our regions around the Pacific Northwest and on the West Coast. Here in California, I kind of feel like we're the epicenter of this affiliation, because Providence was here in the Los Angeles area, Los Angeles County, and then St. Joseph Hoag Health is in Orange County and High Desert.
Right.
So we're really kind of abut each other.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've been wrestling with, you know, what's the way for us to identify ourselves? And we're working on that right now. We are, but even without the way we name ourselves, we are working wildly close together. Our colleagues in Orange County and High Desert with LA, we meet regularly. Our counterparts are interacting. We're sharing best practices. It's been an incredible affiliation, and our cultures are a lot alike, so it made coming together, you know, pretty easy.
So alongside that, I know Zach, you had a question too, but really quickly, I know you already have St. Joseph Medical Center in Burbank. So in my head, I'm looking at Providence St. Joseph Health St. Joseph Medical Center. And I don't think that'll be the official name of it, but I was curious if...
So now you hear and understand why this hasn't been an easy, okay, just take a new logo and plop it on there that says, yeah, Providence St. Joseph. And that is actually one of the very specific reasons. Yeah. We also have we have other very important identifiers. I hate to use brand name, but identifiers, you know, Hoag is a very important identifier in Orange County, as is St. Joseph. You know, so we have to think this through very carefully and make sure that we don't confuse the public. But you know what? The reality is healthcare is very local.
Absolutely.
So whatever logo we might use, you know, below the ministry or hospital name, it's probably less important than the name of that hospital, because that's what people identify with. I know I do.
Yeah.
When I think about where my parents go or I go.
Absolutely.
That name reminds me of the Los Angeles Angels, the Angels Angels. So
exactly.
That's funny. You think of it that way.
You had mentioned earlier with the discharge comments about that the acute settings are getting better at that, and I think a lot of that was out of necessity. I think the other thing that we've seen is a trend. Providence is not the only health system that's consolidating smaller health systems. And we've had people on that have talked about the difficulty with being a standalone practice or being a standalone health system in the current environment. In your opinion, do you think that that's a trend that we will continue to see, health systems continuing to merge and basically ending up with a few massive health systems rather than the way it is now with a more fragmented and smaller health systems or regional health systems?
I can't imagine that we're not going to continue to see this shift. I worked for a small independent system at the start of my career back in Connecticut, Waterbury Hospital and the Greater Waterbury Health Network. It's really kind of one hospital and you know, a number of subsidiaries. When I think back to those days, having just simply no access to benchmark data from any other hospital, you know, it's an extraordinary disadvantage. In Providence, like when I was in Tenet, I have benchmark data for 50 hospitals across Providence and, you know, more than that when I was in Tenet. So, you know, if I want to see whether, you know, we're doing well in one area or not, I can look at, you know, so many others.
Right.
Okay, so that's one example. But maybe an even as important example is the scale that's necessary to bring your cost structure down.
Yeah.
We're not getting more reimbursement.
Right.
We're getting less reimbursement. You know, just yesterday, information was coming out from the Trump administration on their proposed budget. And, you know, talk about very, very significant, frankly, scary cuts to Medicaid.
Right.
Those who need health care probably more than anybody.
Yeah. I think about $880 billion or so, or $800 billion or so, it was the number.
Yeah. If I'm getting pale while you say that, you'll, you'll understand.
Yeah.
And, you know, think about it. You know, one in four people here in Los Angeles are on Medi-Cal.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty worrisome trend in what's being proposed by this administration. But, you know, setting that aside for a second, if we don't find ways of using our scale to get better purchasing power, then I think we're going to be really hard pressed to survive in this difficult environment. Now, those that are independent hospitals that are out there today, man, I am so impressed with them.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate the independence that they have had, that they've stood by, but I think it's going to get harder and harder.
Yeah. Well, that's actually an excellent kind of segue into something that I wanted to ask you about with your role in trying to run this significant portion of this large health system. Because it seems like the current healthcare environment, politically and the way that it's structured through, you know, Medi-Cal or, you know, through Medicare or through private insurance, it's in a state of constant flux. So how do you guide an organization forward when you have no idea what the policy is going to look like or what reimbursements are going to look like, you know, in the coming years? Because you can't just stop and stay stagnant. You still have to grow and move forward. So how do you work like that in an environment like we have?
I love that question. You know, I would say first, we stay true to our mission. We are here to care for our community. When we say the poor and vulnerable, all hospitals have to care for the poor, but we really want to have a focus on making sure that we are consistent in our approach. But when you think about vulnerable, that's you and me. You know, if I don't feel well, I am vulnerable. So if you stay true to your mission and your objective is to provide good quality care and an outstanding experience so people can be comforted and get back to their normal lives, if you stay with that, it is grounding in the decisions that you make.
Yeah.
And thank you for the compliment of you know, suggesting that, you know, I lead and so on and so forth. But part of leadership is relying on the people around you. I have extraordinary colleagues. They are brilliant.
Yeah.
So my role with them is to gain inputs every day from what they're seeing out there, what trends, what challenges, what opportunities we have, and then apply that to goal setting. Somebody said to me the other day, we need to put a 10-year goal together. And the first thing that went through my mind was, I don't think that is possible anymore in at least the healthcare environment, and right. Maybe not too many others.
Yeah.
That said, I do think you have to have a goal.
Yeah.
So, you know, as we sit down with our strategic advisory committee in our Los Angeles region, you know, we may be thinking out 3 years from now, but that set of strategies needs to be liquid. So it may be that we set in on that strategy and we locked arms, and then, you know, 8 months, 12 months from now, it things have changed. And so we've got to adjust it a little bit so right. That we are sure we're meeting the needs of our communities and going back to the core of that mission.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you talked about staying with your mission, and I know certain systems like yours, community benefit is a big part of Providence's efforts, mission. Tell us a little bit about how Providence is serving the community.
Yeah, it's important, Gavin, because that extension out into the community also is, you know, we talked about population health earlier.
Yeah.
So our extension out into the community, in particular and let me just speak about mental health.
Yeah.
Is a real drive for us right now. You know, to the credit of our CEO, Rod Hochman, there was a decision made when we brought Providence Health and Services and St. Joseph Health together to invest $100 million in reducing the stigma around mental illness. And I'm so pleased about that, because when I think about mental illness, it to me, it's no different than a disease of the heart or of another organ. This is a disease of an organ that's inside of our head rather than inside of our chest.
Right.
1 in 5 people suffer from some sort of behavioral health issue. It could be just depression from issues going on in life, or it could be something much more significant. So one of the ways that we are addressing that outreach, that community benefit, is here in California, we're going to deploy $30 million over 3 years to developing programs that reach out into our communities and get in front of disease.
Yeah.
So that people don't wind up in our emergency departments with something really traumatic. And so some of this will be, for example, having navigators in our physician practices, that they will, after you have your physical, they'll do a quick evaluation on how your mental well-being is. And if there's a need there, then they'll help you get some treatment or advice. You know, so that's one aspect of it. But another aspect of our community benefit is providing education out in the community. We have a whole group of community resource associates, caregivers that go out to senior centers and to churches and synagogues and temples and provide education to people about how to eat better, how to not live a sedentary lifestyle. And I think those types of things can be, you know, really contribute towards well-being.
That's great. I know.
And for the record, we did just hear a hospital CEO say that they're going to spend money to keep people out of the hospital, which is an amazing trend that we're starting to see more and more here.
We have to.
Yeah. So I know with Community Benefit, one of the events Providence puts on for the hospice side is Sunday by the Sea. And I know some of our colleagues have been attending that regularly. And, you know, your hospice, Trinity Care, is
played amazing.
And I've known them for over a decade.
So, you know, I am so proud of their work. They are the largest provider in the United States of hospice and palliative care to adolescents, to children.
Yeah.
And these are some of the most difficult stories of all. And we have these special programs or volunteer programs where artists, you know, musicians will come together with families and they'll, you know, develop a song with the, you know, with the child who is not well, and it becomes an everlasting memory of that child for the family.
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
No, well said, and thank you for bringing up the pediatric component of your hospice, as there's not a lot out there. As we come to a close here, Providence throughout the West Northwest does quite a bit, not just the ministries of the hospitals, but also things like adult day programs, assisted living, skilled nursing even. Do you anticipate here in Southern California, down the road, Providence being open to perhaps owning or operating those type of services here as well?
It could be. I think what's more important is that there's an alignment there. You know, it goes back to what we talked about earlier about let's get rid of the word discharge.
Yeah.
How do we transition people to the most appropriate next comfort level of care? And so some of this is having relationships so that continuum is very smooth. You know, what I worry about is, you know, we traditionally, and for regulatory reasons, provide just, you know, a list of potential providers out there. And some of them are outstanding and some, you know, may not be outstanding. We're very careful at Providence to be selective. And, you know, we had talked at one time together about how we credential those providers, so that they have to have a certain level of service. I think those relationships in credentialing and ensuring that you've got the best and brightest that you're transitioning your patients to so they're safe is got to be a focus. And you don't have to own everything, but you do have to take responsibility to make sure those transitions are good.
Absolutely.
Well said, Eric. Well, we have gotten through quite a bit of information today.
Sincere thank you, too. We know how busy your schedule is, and so thank you so much for sitting down with us. I know the audience is going to really take a lot from this. I know we did. So thank you for your time.
Well, I just have to tell you, you know, Gavin, Zach, you guys are amazing. I love working with you. I think your audience is so fortunate to have you out here doing this type of thing because you not only ask the right questions, but you're inspiring to people like me. So thank you for your work.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And to the audience, thank you all for listening.
Everyone, and if you do like the episode, don't forget to go to pophealthpodcast.com to listen to other episodes. On iTunes, we'd love for you to give us a 4 or 5-star review, 5-star especially, and leave comments. And if you don't like us, feel free to email either of us, Zachary@pophealthpodcast.com or Gavin@pophealthpodcast.com with any feedback or suggestions for guests as well. Thanks so much, everybody. Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-hour home care.